For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Season 5. Support for the Boner Planet Podcast is presented by
Dead Downwind, Tinks, Shadowhunter Blinds, Burris Optics, Dead Ringer, The Grind, Bomar Archery, Element Outdoors, Reveal Cellular Camera, HHA and HHA USA, Black Eagle Arrows.
Additional support provided by Deer Camp Coffee and Yeti Coolers.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Bowhunter Planet Podcast. Tonight it's myself, Tim Mazzarana, and Jamie Noteboom, and we have a special guest in the house. I'm actually really excited to talk to him tonight. Scott Nice from Thorn Broadheads. You are the operating officer. Is that correct? Operations operating officer. I already forgot that. You told
operations me manager.
Operations manager.
Yeah, that's what I get for not writing anything down, man. That's my fault.
So it's kind of an official term for a guy that wears a lot of hats.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. In fact, I unfortunately know it well. I am an operations manager myself at the company that I work for, not Bowhunter Planet. And it is. We call it the stuff department because All the different stuff, that's where it goes. You gotta really know what's coming your way. So
exactly.
I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Well, I'm excited to have you on, man. We had a little bit of a chat a couple days ago, just talking about different topics and stuff like that, and really wanted to pick your brain on, Thorn number one, but number two, wanted to pick your brain a little bit about deer, man, because you had some interesting insights in regards to deer patterns and what they're doing throughout the year. You know, I think a lot of us kind of struggle. I know we always struggle with, you know, you're putting up the cell phone cameras and you're doing all that stuff kind of in summer, you're watching all the deer, you know, up until hunting season, and hunting season comes and all of a sudden everything's gone, right? Everything changes. It's kind of interesting, you know, you always want to blame it on a bunch of different stuff, but you had some good ideas as to why that actually happens.
Well, you know, I've, it's hard to explain, but I'm, you know, I'll be 47 this summer. And I mean, I got my first bow when I was 8.
Wow.
And, you know, I've just, my family hunted, and just from a young age, I grew up around it. Of course, in Southern Ohio back then, we didn't have the deer populations that we have now. I mean, if you saw a buck,
you're shooting it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I can remember my dad, you know, killing a nice, back then, maybe a 120 inch 8-point buck. And I mean, you know, you'd have thought that thing was a daggone elk, you know, 'cause back then you just didn't see the caliber of deer that we have here in Southern Ohio today. And it just kind of fueled a passion for me. And I mean, obviously, you know, with me working in the outdoor industry now and with the Broadhead company, I mean, it's like, how could it get any better?
Right.
You know, so, you know, I can almost honestly say that I've spent a lifetime studying whitetails and, you know, I'm a meat hunter and a trophy hunter. You know, I know in today's society, they want to label people, oh, he's just a trophy hunter or whatever, you know, and I try not to get into all of that, but for me, it's that cat and mouse game. You know, I've had deer that I've spent 2, 3, 4 years trying to kill.
Yeah.
And, you know, after you get that deer, there's a, to be honest with you, there's kind of a little bit of like, oh, wow, you know, it finally happened. And, you know, then it's like, now what do we do?
Yeah.
Now it's over.
You know, and so as far as studying deer, you know, and I don't have a degree in wildlife management. You know, I want everybody to know that up front. You know, I'm just an old hillbilly from Southern Ohio that just eats it, sleeps it, breathes it, you know, and I've been fortunate. I've killed some really nice deer. But just over the years, like you said, running trail cameras, just watching deer, you know, some things that a lot of people have questions on. And quite honestly, I had questions on it myself. And of course, I had a little bit of a leg up. I had a friend that was a wildlife biologist for the state of West Virginia. He's retired now. But anyways, I swear he used to hate to have me call because he knew I was going to pick his brain until there was nothing left to pick. But, you know, we obviously talked a lot of deer hunting, and, you know, I've got one of my best friends is an outfitter, and, you know, so he and I were always talking about deer. But so moving on from that, but, you know, one of the questions or one of the things that I hear all the time is guys are like, okay, in the summertime, I see the bucks out in the fields and the deer out in the fields when it's, you know, when it's 90 degrees out, but in the fall, when it gets late October, November, if it's much above 40, 50 degrees, you don't hardly see them in the daytime. And, you know, guys are like, you know, I just don't understand it. Yeah. And, so me being me, I, you know, dug in to do some research, and what I found, as soon as I read it, you know, the old light bulb went off, and I'm right. Like, well, that makes perfect sense. When deer shed from summer to fall and then winter to summer, that summer hair, not only is it a different color, but the hairs themselves are different in that they actually, they're designed to release heat from their body. When they shed that, and again, it's going to depend on where you're at in the country, but here in Southern Ohio, you're typically going to be looking at about that early September, early to mid-September is when you'll really start noticing dew their summer shed. And when that gray or darker looking hair comes in, those hairs are larger and hollow, more they're real hollow. Those are designed to keep the heat in their body.
That makes so sense.
As soon as I read that, you know, light bulb went off, and I'm like, okay, so that's why, you know, in the summertime, you'll see that buck out in a hay field or a bean field or something, you know, when the sun's shining and it's really hot, because their coat, their hair literally allows the heat to escape from their body. And so I call my biologist buddy, and I'm talking to him, and he goes, listen, if you had to run a marathon and it was 50 degrees out, 60 degrees, and somebody made you put your big heavy winter parka on, how long are you gonna be out in that heat?
Yeah,
that makes sense.
You know, yeah. Not very long. So that was one of the things that really kind of clicked and made sense with me, and it's a good explanation of why a lot of times if you notice during the rut period. Everybody says, well, the rut happened at night. Well, if you start looking at your temperatures, those bucks aren't going to chase does all day in the heat when they've got that winter coat on.
Yeah.
It would hold so much heat inside their body, it literally can almost cook their internals.
Yeah, they would overheat at that point, right?
Exactly. So, you know, and I mean, you'll see them on a 45 degree day. If you do get one chasing a doe, just frothing at the mouth, and it's just simply because of that winter coat is just trying to hold all that heat in their body.
Well, that's different than Jamie though, because Jamie, when he's chasing those girls around back in the day, he would foam at the mouth too, but it was because of
yeah. Other yeah, I got there's some things we don't like to talk about that though.
Yeah. So. And then, you know, another thing that, you know, it always kind of something that caught my interest years ago, when my wife and I first bought our property back in 1997, you know, and we're here in Southern Ohio. It's not mountainous, but it's hilly. And when you leave the main blacktop road, we live about a mile out from the blacktop, but it's about a 350 foot elevation change
going up.
And, you know, I noticed in the summertime, there's some hay fields down in the bottom and man, there'd be bucks out like crazy. And I've got a good friend of mine that lives right on basically on the blacktop road and, you know, all summer long taking pictures, sitting on his back deck, watching these big giant bucks out in the field. And then come fall, they're gone. Well, I would notice that starting in about late September, I would start picking up the exact same deer that he had behind his house all summer long. They had moved up the hill or hills, basically, you know, almost a mile, and they would be at my place all summer or all winter, you know, because I'm serious here at my place. I mean, I run cameras year round. I promise you, you won't see anything over a year and a half old buck in the summer. Anything older than that. Yep. They come up in the winter. So the long and the short of it is that bucks typically don't winter where they summer. And I'm like, okay, I got to find out why.
Yeah.
You know, and really so far, you know, what I've come up with is the bucks and the does don't want to be really outside of the rut. They don't care to be around each other too much. An old mature doe will run a buck off, you know, as much as she can. And so I do have a very healthy doe population year round, you know, summertime, you know, my back food plot, it's nothing to see, you know, 10 to 15, 16 deer at a time, but it's going to be primarily, you know, does and fawns. Very seldom will I ever get a picture in the summertime of, you know, again, nothing much more than maybe a year and a half old buck, you know, maybe a 2 year old, but any of your 4 and 5 year olds, I will not see them until about mid to late September. And then they just cruise, you know, they might be here. You might get them on camera coming through. And then it could be another week. And then they'll come through again. They're just kind
of migrating through.
And what I think they're doing is just cruising the does.
Yeah.
Pre-rut, they're cruising the does. And it's all
territory, you think, too?
Yeah, kind of like their tally book. Yeah. Hey, man, there's a bunch of does up here.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I want to be in November. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of factors. You know, food sources play a role in that. You know, and I think in the summertime too, those bucks like it down in that bottom. There's a creek bed that runs down through those hay fields, and there's a couple swampy areas. Some timber, cattails, just a swampy area. So there's plenty of water and it's cooler. You know, and we're up here on the hill. Of course, we have water, but it's right through the heat of the day. It is hotter up here than it would be down by that creek bottom. So I think that plays into it some. Of course, with the hay fields there, plenty of greenery for them. You know, we've got food plots up here, but I think it's just more appealing to them. And then with, you know, with the does being up here real steady, I think they just kind of stay away from one another, you know, until that mid-October to late October when, you know, pre-rut and rut. And then, you know, they'll stay up here for a while. Typically, they'll stay up here till around February-ish, early March. And then they migrate right back down toward the bottom, and they'll stay there the rest of the summer.
That's pretty interesting, man.
Yeah, we got the summer property apparently.
Yeah, no, we definitely do. And I think the different properties that I hunt, I think are a lot of summer properties. I think it's really kind of validation for me too, in regards to, you know, a lot of us when we're hunting that early October, kind of to mid-October, you're really only hunting mornings and evenings. You're not really doing a lot of midday stuff because you just never see deer moving during the midday. But to your point, and I think that's the validation for me, is that midday is when it's going to become the warmest, right? And they're not going to be moving around as much and all of that. So they're it's that temperature change that they're really sensing that's getting them kicked up and getting them moving. So that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. It's not me. It's not that I'm moving too much around in my ground blind. It's the weather, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, and like I said, food source. Yeah, I'm not gonna throw no shade on anybody. So
I will.
Yeah. You'll step up to the plate, right?
Oh, he will. So,
yeah, you know, and food source plays a big part of it. And, you know, this year in Southern Ohio, we had an absolute bumper crop of acorns.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, nothing trumps acorns.
Yep.
And there was so many that the deer literally, they never left. Anywhere.
They never left. Yeah, we had a similar scenario 2 years ago, where there was very little deer at all, the whole entire season. The only people that were seeing them were the people seeing them that had spots set up where they bed at, because they wouldn't go anywhere. They would wake up, they would eat their acorns. They would basically bed almost in the same area and then just stay there the whole day. There was barely any movement trying to find food at all. And that lasted all season 2 years ago. It was absolutely crazy.
Yeah. And you know, unless you've got a large chunk of real estate that you're hunting where you can find that oak flat, that oak grove that has the, you know, and of course, you know, white oak is their favorite.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to eat those first. So, you know, if you're on a smaller property and you don't have a lot of oaks on it, man, you're in trouble.
Yeah, unless there's something to draw them in, there's not much you can do but just sit and wait and hope by chance, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's honestly about it.
Yeah. So if you had, I'm just thinking out loud here, but like you're talking about kind of that pre-rut, you kind of see those bucks moving in a little bit more, kind of feeling out the deer herds and that kind of stuff. Have you ever tried to like do like preset or like do scents during that time to attract the bucks up towards your area so that they think that there's more does to kind of keep them on the property? I'm just wondering if that's more of a better technique to really do it more. Cause I use scents, but I don't do a lot of pre-rut stuff, right? When rut hits, you know, I do a lot of scents that, but I'm not wondering now if it makes a lot of sense to start doing the pre-rut so that you can get those bucks moving in looking for those does in that area, so they get more used to coming into that area.
Absolutely. And, you know, mock scrapes is, you know, in the last few years, I've really started honestly paying a little more attention to those and doing a little more research on them. And, you know, what I found is that's almost a twofold plan of attack, I guess you could say, using a little bit of doe urine in them and a little bit of buck urine, because, you know, if you're the stud buck in the area and another guy shows up and he pees in that scrape, you know, the dominant mature buck, he's going to be like, oh, heck no. You know, there ain't nobody coming in here.
Right.
And, you know, he'll frequent that area a little more, trying to catch that other buck there and have an opportunity to let him know that you ain't welcome here, you know, run him off. So, yeah, I think that's a twofold deal, and there's definitely merit to that. And, you know, I don't know about where you guys are at, but I know here in Ohio, the archery hunting, our kill numbers for a long time, you know, your shotgun was way up here, your archery was down here. Well, we could slowly start to see them even out. And this year, the archery numbers actually surpassed our shotgun numbers, which was not surprising to me. But what that tells me is, obviously, there's more guys archery hunting.
Yeah.
Which means that your early, which, you know, our season here opens up at the end of September. And our shotgun season doesn't open until the week after Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow. Okay. So there's no gun at all until after Thanksgiving?
Well, there is. There's a 2-day doe hunt.
Yeah, we got that too.
Okay.
Like a muzzleloader, doe hunt. And then our youth season is before Thanksgiving. but the point being that where the deer clear up until after Thanksgiving had very little pressure on them because there weren't as many guys archery hunting. Now, all of a sudden, you've got, from day one of archery season, you've got a lot more pressure on the deer.
Yeah.
Because you've got a higher number of people that are in the woods with their compound, crossbow, recurve, whatever. It's just, there's more people there in the woods putting more pressure on them. So, you know, the honest truth is that, you know, it's like anything else, whether you're into racing, fishing, golf, whatever, when the pressure's on, you got to up your game.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to, you have to work for it.
No doubt. And Jamie, what that means is that come September, I'm going to need you to start my mock scrapes for me.
Yeah.
Probably 3 or 4. I'm thinking in the line, you know, all the way on my side of the property.
You just map them out for me, buddy. I'll do it.
I'll drop you some pins on Google.
So yeah, and set the cameras.
And I'll put coyote pee in it.
That's exactly
what I expect. Yeah, that would be productive.
I absolutely
funnel them right to me.
you're gonna have them funnel right to you. Oh man, I love it. But that, honestly, it seems so simple, right? What you're saying, but it's one of those things, like you were saying, is like
until you hear it,
until you say it, until you said it, that aha moment. It was just sitting there waiting to come out, and then you're like, that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense, man. Makes a ton of sense.
Well, you know, it used to be, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I mean, there were guys that had one tree stand. That was the only place they hunted. I mean, when they said, I'm going hunting,
that was it.
You know, you didn't have to ask, where are you going? You knew where they were going. And, you know, because that's where they always went.
Yeah.
And, you know, but as the years have went on, and, you know, the whole dynamic of hunting has changed a little bit just because of the numbers of people that are out in the early season, which, you know, hey, guys are realizing, wait a minute, man, instead of freezing my butt off during shotgun or late muzzleloader, I can be out there in October when it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, not freezing my buns off.
Oh, see, nothing, now you're
nothing like nothing like a 45 degree day, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Even 40.
Yeah.
Last year, I think we had even some almost 80 degrees. I remember it was too hot to see deer. Like I wasn't expecting to see anything just because of how blatantly hot it was.
And because you're hunting out in there, Crocs.
Yeah, went out there in the last gear I had, and I went out there in my camo Crocs, and I just kind of chilled, man.
Did you put them in four-wheel drive mode with the strap?
Oh, you probably did.
I hooked the four-wheel drive on the back heel and took off.
Yeah, so you flip the switch, you know.
That's it.
Flip the switch.
That's it. So it's fun, man. It's fun. So, you do any turkey hunting at all? You got turkey season coming up in Ohio, I'm assuming, in the next couple months, like we do up in Michigan.
Yeah, it's toward the end of April. Forget the exact date. And you know, there's something that I just, you know, I really didn't get into turkey hunting until about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That's true. And, you know, I'm way better at deer hunting than turkey hunting.
Right.
The calling part, I'm still learning that.
That's an art for sure.
Yeah. The box call makes it easy, but I'm telling you, because I never got into it because I'm like, nobody cares about a bird, but I'm telling you, as soon as that thing struts in on you, that changes everything. I go, whoa, this is cool.
It is, you know, it is. And so the last couple, 3 years, I do, you know, I'll hit two or three states, you know, I'll hunt Ohio, you know, West Virginia, Oklahoma, you know, a few places like that. And you kind of get bit by the bug, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm having fun with it. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's
you know, it's still not deer hunting. Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think we're the same way. I mean, we love our deer hunting, but turkey hunting just kind of changes it up. You know, you don't have to worry about as much as when you're deer hunting, you know, the scents and the sounds and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can be a little bit more active, if you will, in when you're what you're doing. And what I was actually, Jamie and I were talking on our live show just before this, some of the funnest times that I've had turkey hunting were actually doing more of a spotting stalk. You know, you come up on a group and you're just kind of, you got a couple guys and you're kind of organizing, okay, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to try and shoot it. Why don't you go up around this way, see if you can push them over here. I mean, you can't do that with deer. I mean, people will try, but it just, you can't hurt a deer. I mean, that's just never going to work. So I think it's a lot different, a lot more fun, to be honest with you, to be able to get out in the springtime, enjoy a little bit of the outdoors, and just be able to get out there without all the prep that goes into deer hunting at all. So I think it's
pretty cool. Well, you know, I haven't had the pleasure of elk yet. But you know, a lot of guys I know have, and you know, turkey hunting is a little bit like elk hunting because they're vocal.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're turkey hunting, you know, you can get on a ridge or something and, you know, do a hoot owl or get just whatever you do to get them to shot gobble so that you know there's a bird on that ridge or two ridges away, like an elk. You know, if you can bugle or cow call and get that elk to bugle, you kind of know where to go start looking for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, a big white-tailed buck, you just don't have that.
No, you don't. You know. You're right. That is probably one of the funnest parts is getting them to respond. I mean, once you start calling and they start calling back, I mean, it is probably one of the coolest things to watch. And then they start walking in and It's fun, man. I can't wait. I know we keep talking about, there's not much to talk about this time of year. Not much hunting going on. Ice fishing's kind of all over with. You know, there's some coyote stuff going on, so we end up on turkey topics a lot, and I can't wait, man. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. When you get a big gobbler coming in, spitting and drumming,
yeah,
and, you know, gobbling his head off, I mean, it just tees you up.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, you know, they're tasty, too. I mean, like you said earlier, like,
oh, heck yeah.
I'm more of a meat hunter. I'm not really a trophy hunter, really, because I don't see trophies. So yeah. I'm more of a meat hunter by nature.
Welcome to Michigan.
Yeah, by necessity. Yeah,
it makes it easy for you, right?
Yeah, well, it was funny because you were talking about back in the day, Ohio, when you got that 128 point, and like you think that would be an elk. I mean, we think that every year up here in Michigan.
Yeah,
that's a good deer for us. You know?
Well, deer management's a whole nother can of worms.
Oh, no doubt.
And you know, you have to change the mindset of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, to make it work. And man, we ain't got enough time to get into that.
Yeah. No, that is definitely another topic, man. But, gosh, dude, I mean, what you share with us tonight, really appreciate it. Really good insight on everything. I can tell you one thing, Thorn Broadhead's has a great operations manager in you, because you know it all and you do it all. So I think that's pretty awesome.
It's just a good fit, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, Thorn Broadheads, I mean, we had you guys on a couple weeks ago to talk about everything, but we spent a lot of time talking about that, that crown and just what a game changer that crown looks like, you know, and we can't wait to try and see what we could do with those things.
Should probably pop a turkey with that thing.
It is. I love the name. When I first saw it, I'm like, man, that is a Christmas tree on the end of my arrow. I love it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because in development of this broadhead, and if we got a minute, I'd like to tell you this story.
Yeah, for sure.
Andy and Heath work in the warehouse and office down in North Carolina. Obviously, I'm here in Ohio, and, you know, over the years, I've worked for other companies, and I've been a part of a lot of product design and development. I have designed and developed several items, but when Andy first come to me about the fixed blade broadhead, I was like, you know, man, we've got a super, super product in our expandables, you know, right. They're super accurate, dependable, they're tough, you know, they do a good job. And I'm like, Andy, I haven't shot a fixed blade broadhead in 25 years, you know, because if I find one that flew good, it didn't cut like I wanted it to. And if I found one that cut good, it didn't fly like I wanted it to. And I just, you know, I stuck with mechanicals. And you know, honestly, when I got a hold of the original Thorn OG broadhead and shot it and hunted with it, I'm not gonna lie to you, that's what got me interested, and that's why I ended up working for the company. Awesome. And you know, now all of a sudden Andy's like, well, we're gonna do a fixed blade. What? So
the hell we are.
yeah, that was pretty much it. And I said, well, it's going to have to fill a tall order here, you know, in order for me to go along with it. So he started sharing with me, you know, his original idea for the broadhead. And so originally, all four blades were the same width.
Yeah.
They were 1 inch. Out to 20, 25 yards, it flew really good. It cut really good, but beyond that, it just wasn't accurate. And so I, and at this point, I didn't have any yet. So Andy calls me and he goes, man, I'm just so frustrated. He said, this thing, you know, 20, 25 yards, it's great, but past that, it's just not. I said, listen, send me some up. Let me play with them. You know, let me shoot them and let me see what I can do. So he sends me three broadheads, and I shot them. And of course I come up with the same thing that he and he did. basically they were great 20, 25 yards. After that, not so much. And I was sitting there and my wife was watching me shoot. And I mean, I did a 50 yard shot and completely missed a Glendale buck.
Wow.
And she's like, what the heck was that? And I'm like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
So I start looking at it and it hit me. This thing's got to be shaped like a Christmas tree. So when you said that, that's why I brought this up.
That's so funny.
So I come in the house and, I'm sitting there and I'm studying this broadhead. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, that's it. We have to step the blades to keep the aerodynamics. We're not going to lose much cut, but we're going to gain a ton of accuracy. So I get on the phone, I call Andy, and I'm like, I got it. This thing's got to be shaped like a Christmas tree. And he goes, what? And I said, we need to step the blades. We need to start out, you know, with about a 5/8 inch and then work our way up to the 1 inch. So he gets on the phone to our machine shop. He goes, listen, I need to take some 1 inch blades. And I need you guys to, you know, cut them down, reshape them for us. We want to go, you know, we want to stair step them. So they did. And they got, I don't know, 3 or 4 dozen blades ready. And Andy picked them up. They built some broadheads. They shot them. And he calls me up. He's like, dude, that was genius. He said, these things are flying like darts now out to 90 and 100 yards.
I love it, man.
So he sent me some more. And, you know, we test everything very thoroughly. Compounds, crossbows. We've got a couple staff guys that are very, very good friends of ours that are the trad guys, you know, shooting recurves and longbows. And so we sent them some of the new design crowns, and those guys love them. Yeah. The penetration they get with them, they don't have to run a stinking 180 grain head on that thing anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they can run a 125 crown and just, you know, super penetration, excellent accuracy. I mean, out of a crossbow, we were getting 2-inch groups at 100 yards.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. We got a chance to play around with them last fall, shot them through some ballistics gel, and the way that it just corded out, right? Because the way you guys have everything positioned, it keeps that spiral when it's penetrating into the ballistics gel, and it just corded out, and it was absolutely awesome, man. So you guys have a good product there for sure. Yeah,
we're going to try it on some deer.
For sure, man. Well, Scott, man, I really appreciate you joining us. We're definitely going to have you on again, do some more
chatting
about deer and strategy and, you know, see what's new at Thorn and all that stuff, man. So I really appreciate you joining us tonight.
Yes, man, I love being here. You guys are great to talk to, great to hang out with. We love what you're doing for archery.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.